Good evening, and welcome to LIS Radio ClassCast. This is, I believe, the first ClassCast of the semester, and this is a ClassCast for CISLT's 9433 class, Library Services to Youth. Let me give you the phone numbers you can use to call in right away. Those phone numbers, if you're in the Columbia or Mid-Missouri area, are 573-884-3803. If you are calling from outside the Columbia area, if you would normally pay long distance to call to Columbia, please call our toll-free number, which is 866-768-5483. Now, since this is our first broadcast tonight, I figured I would welcome any questions you might have about the syllabus, about course expectations, about anything like that. But since this week we are dedicated to discussing children's services and teen services librarians, I also figured I would talk about a study that I did about 2 or 3 years ago, in which I looked at job advertisements for youth services librarians. So this study, I must have done it in 2002 because it was published in 2003, involved looking at 285 job advertisements placed for youth services librarians in Library Journal and American Libraries. Those advertisements were placed over a period of about 30 years. I looked at ads from every 5 years, starting in 1971, 1976, going through 1981, 1986, 1991, 1996, and finally ending in the year 2001. Now, along those times, we saw something very consistent in the number of advertisements for children's services librarians. In 1971, there were 14 advertisements, and that number increased very, very steadily throughout the years. Actually, it peaked in 1986 with 85 advertisements for youth services librarians, but by 2001, there were 49 ads. Now you say, oh, this is good news. This is happy. This means that there are more jobs for children's librarians. Well, yes and no. I did not actually do anything with this data, but I also counted up how many ads we saw in 2001, 49 ads, and how many we saw in a year's period from May-June issue of American Libraries to the June issue of the 2003 in American Libraries, and I noticed that those ads, there was a remarkably sharp decline in the number of those ads. I believe, I don't have the figure in front of me, but from 49 ads, we went to about 20-something. So this, of course, suggests something else. It either suggests that there is a short that after 2001, when we had an economic decline, a lagging economy, either public libraries were eliminating children's services professional jobs, and I suspect this is partially true, or public libraries were starting to use other advertising media and not spring in the big dough to get into American Libraries or Library Journal, because those journals are kind of expensive. So anyway, that's the situation, or at least that was the situation 2 years ago. 2001, we had a plethora of jobs. 2003, not so many. But we hear that there are a plethora of jobs again. In fact, I just posted a job yesterday. And if you want to work in St. Charles, you apply for that job. Anyway, so here we are, 285 job ads. And what did those job ads look for? It's a question. Well, overwhelmingly, those job ads sought librarians or coordinators. Sometimes they sought supervisors, sometimes they sought heads or chiefs. But overwhelmingly, they wanted somebody who was a librarian or a coordinator, sometimes a specialist. And in general, those positions were serving children. 73% of ads sought children's librarians. 18% sought youth or children and young adult librarians, and 7% sought young adult librarians. Now, for those of you who actually are planning on being young adult librarians, this is not such good news. This means that you will have a significantly lesser chance of finding a job than if you were going to be a children's librarian. However, another interesting thing that kind of has come up, in 1971, all of the ads we saw looked for children's librarians. We didn't want to hear about people who were serving young adults. However, in 2001, 43% of ads used youth or children and young adults, which could be a sign of greater acceptance of young adult services, or it could be a sign that libraries realize, hey, we need to serve teens, but we don't want to spend more money for it. So, that's the good news and the bad news. If anybody is tuning in late or hasn't gotten in right away, let me give you the numbers you can call in once again. In Columbia and Mid-Missouri, the number is 573-884-3803. In anywhere other than Mid-Missouri, if you would have to pay long distance to call us, dial 866-768-5483. And as I said earlier, I am taking questions about the syllabus, about the class, about anything you might want to talk about, or if you have a discussion point, you are welcome to call in and discuss. When the phone rings, I have just learned, there is a large flashing strobe light kind of thing that goes off in the studio, so, oh, and there's the phone ringing now. Okay. So,
syllabus, about the class, about...
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, who are you?
This is Robin in Topeka.
Oh, hey.
I just wanted to make a comment on your statement about the change from children postings to children's and youth postings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because back then they didn't do a lot with youth at all. I mean, it wasn't the children's librarian's focus to be worried about anybody over the age of 10. Seriously. You know, when I look back at the pictures and stuff like that, it's young children. And it's like once they turn 10 or 12, they went into another world or something, and I'm excited to see the youth being included now and you know, having programs and stuff like that. And I think there's funding for that right now through grants and that kind of stuff. And I think that's why it's also growing.
Good point.
And we're realizing that it's a continuum. You know, if you don't keep them in the library, then they go away. So.
That's right. And we do tend to lose them around fifth grade. Is the figure that I've heard around fifth grade they start going away.
Mm-hmm. Because that's when they can start doing things on their own. You know, their mom doesn't necessarily can't make them go to the library. You know, so they become a little bit more independent. But anyway, I just want to make a comment on that. And
I will put you down for 1 point of extra credit. So everybody be aware, there's extra credit if you call in.
The other thing I wanted to make a comment on too is, I really like the two books that we're using, and part of the reason I like them is because it's got the information in the back of them about the requirements for librarians, for youth services librarians, the competencies.
Mm-hmm. They've written down on the board, ask her to turn down her computer, because apparently we get feedback.
Okay, it's down.
Okay, and you liked the...
I like the text partly, and I enjoyed having the competencies right there in the back of the text because I'm having to write my evaluation, and I was looking at those things, and I'm going, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, so for other people that have to write their own evaluations or whatever, those competencies, they have great verbs in them and great language to stick in your evaluation. So I just wanted to pass that tip on.
Well, thanks
Denise. Uh-huh, bye-bye.
We have a call online, too. Oh, never mind. We don't have a call online, too, anymore. So, that was Robin from Topeka calling and giving us some very good advice. If you do have to write a job description, the competencies are actually quite useful documents, and indeed they are. One of the reasons why the competencies were written was kind of, in my opinion, a heads-up to administrators to say, hey, we don't just tell stories. We do serious work. All right, now we have a call again.
Hello, caller.
Yes, my name is Erica Rose.
Hey, Erica, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
I actually am going to kind of turn the subject toward the community analysis for the week.
Okay, that's a fine subject to turn it to since it is due next week.
Yes. I have sort of come across an unusual problem, I think. I have an interview with the children's librarian for my chosen community tomorrow, and from everything I've been able to gather so far, I have, like, this really ordinary community. They have very few minorities. They have, you know, they're all pretty much from surface appearances middle class to upper middle class. And so I'm thinking, all right, they already have this beautiful library facility. And so I'm wondering if you have any ideas of about special services that might be brought in, or, you know, what I could talk to the children's librarian about to sort of, you know, make this interesting.
Well, if they have a beautiful library and if they have services that are just amazingly good, you might talk to her about how she decided to plan those services or how those services got started, whether it was parent demand or whether they went out and spoke to people at local schools and got people involved. Another thing you might do is, well, first of all, just because you don't have minorities in the community doesn't mean it's an ordinary community, and many ordinary communities are quite good. You might look at what's going on elsewhere in the community with regards to children. Is there an active sports-type environment? Is there an active youth club? Are there active churches or social organizations for people to get together with children so that the children themselves can interact with each other? Or, there were going to be future words there, but I'm not sure what that was. But you might look at things like what else is going on in the community and possibly even get teachers and schools or look at teachers and schools and figure out where the focus of that community is. Are they looking to themselves? Are they looking for improvements in such a way that it might be construed that they want to build a better life for their children? Is this a bedroom community? Where are you located?
I'm in Omaha, Nebraska.
Ah, you're one of our Nebraskans.
That's me. And actually, the community that I've chosen to do my analysis in is what I would sort of define as a bedroom community. It's a suburb of Omaha.
Ah.
So
you might look at perhaps whether that neighborhood started out, whether people in that neighborhood live there because they feel it's a better neighborhood than Omaha proper.
Okay.
And you might even consider examining, ask people on the street, if you could change anything about this community, what would you like to do?
Perfect.
Another thing is to look at parks and recreation type resources. If there are parks available, you might want to consider that. But I hope that helps somewhat.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Can I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
Completely unrelated topic. I was doing my reading today, and I noticed that one of the programs that they talk about as they discuss how youth services has expanded to even infants and, you know, really small kids, they said something about baby lap sits. Is that something common? I thought it was so interesting, but I'd never seen anything like that at a library before. What exactly is that?
It's not, I hate to say it's uncommon, but it's not tremendously common, at least I haven't seen it to be tremendously common. It tends to involve things like, literally, you bring your baby to the library, you sit the baby on the lap, and you play with its hands and its toes, and you wave its arms around while you do literacy-type activities. So you might say a nursery rhyme and bounce the baby on your knee during certain parts, or things like that to get it serves two purposes, to get parents to start to think about how to interact with their children, because lots of new parents just don't know these things.
Right.
Also to provide a role model so that they see you doing literacy-related activities, you, the librarian, doing literacy-related activities, and parents take that home, and they do literacy-related activities at home because they have that role model. And basically, it's just like a fun program to get parents and kids together in a non-threatening environment so they can just have fun with music and words.
I thought that was so cool. So, well, thank you for that. Well,
thank you for calling in, and I've got you down for 1 point of extra credit.
All right, thanks.
All right. All right, and we have another call. Apparently, offering extra credit is the way to go. Hello, caller.
Hi, this is Lori from Omaha.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, good, good. Actually, I have a question. I want to get some advice.
Okay.
We have a branch in the North Omaha, and it's pretty much brand new, probably about 6 months old.
Okay.
And we have built with it a teen room, teen space. It is absolutely gorgeous, 52-inch TV, probably 12 computers, chairs, movable shelves so you can open the space up.
Mm-hmm.
Our problem is that the kids are coming in, and they've broken the TV already. They throw things around, and we've gone to, you know, locking it up after school, saying, you know, if you guys behave, we'll open it up tomorrow. And they'll come in, they'll behave for 5 minutes, then we lock it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just hate to see this space wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out a way to get them to appreciate and respect what's there for them.
Hmm. That's a good question. Certainly, when I worked in Denver and we had teens come into our library, it was a constant battle of throwing them out, saying, you can't come into the library for the entire rest of the day. Then they come back, and they were contrite for a while, and for a while they were good, and then they were reckless and rowdy again. And it seems like that's just teens for you. They're going to do stuff, and because they're going through those changes of life with hormones raging, they don't always act as responsibly as they ought to. But in terms of how to deal with it, I would say just consistent reinforcement, and maybe other callers out there have other ideas. In fact, this might be something you post to a discussion board.
Because that would be helpful. Because I mean, we've gone to, you know, only 10 can get in there at a time, and it's like little kids, because it's a totally enclosed glass area,
mm-hmm.
so you can see what's going on in there.
Oh,
and it's like the kids are hanging outside, looking in, going, "I want in there." It's kind of sad, the puppy dog look, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let you in, but
mm-hmm.
okay. Well, the other thing I wanted to say is from the I think it was the Bare Bones book about the layout of the young adult areas. From
mm-hmm.
what architects and librarians draw up, and to what the kids draw up, and
wasn't
it was
that amazing.
That was like a weight room and everything. See, they don't just want to sit and play on the computer all day long; they want to do other things.
Yeah, they want a whole community space.
Exactly. I like that.
Exercise the mind and the body.
That's right. I like that. So, but if anybody has any ideas on what we can do to let these kids come into the area and, you know, enjoy what they have there, let me know.
Cool. Okay, and we have another caller as well, or at least the phone light is blinking.
Excuse me?
Hello?
Hello.
Who are you?
Rebecca Smith.
Okay, I'm keeping track of this because you will get an extra credit point.
Great.
Huh? Oh, could you turn down your computer, please?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I up next?
You are up right now.
Great.
How can I help you?
Hi, this is Rebecca Smith.
Hello.
I visited that site from Blue Ridge Elementary because that's where I work, and I just left there tonight, and I was just wanted to call in and say how excited I was about this course and about Hillary's posting today.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary is posting about how the public librarians want to be more in the schools.
Wasn't that great, very inspiring?
It was, and I worked at a public library for 3 years, and so I still kind of think of myself as a public librarian, and I have to say I think most of the school librarians feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We want that partnership, and I talk about the public library all the time. We look books up on the Daniel Boone Library site, and I am basically a train for my kids. I'll go pick books up for them and bring them to them, and there's a lot of trust involved when you do that, but it pays off in the long run. And we talk about the bookmobile, and we've already had the bookmobile out to our school this year.
Wow.
And we're getting ready for our second trip. The bookmobile hopefully will be out at our parent information night, and this is the third year we've done it. And our big goal when we do that is to promote our families getting library cards, and
mm-hmm.
It really is paying off. I mean, I just really can see the difference in our school, and I just would encourage any school librarians to do this. And it's just, I was so excited to see it from a public librarian point of view, that her posting that, because I think we all have the same common goal, mm-hmm. and our kids are going to be better for it.
Yeah, it's, I think, very easy when you're working in the public library to get caught in that trap of, oh, the schools, they send these students over and we, and they don't tell us anything. But really, if you can work with schools,
yes.
it's just such a more dynamic and positive relationship.
Yes, it is. And we are, you know, I just stress the point that we do want to work with the public librarians, and we're here, and we have email, and send us emails, and we'll email you. And I love the that the library sent us storytellers, and mm-hmm. I just think the key is just working on that partnership.
Mm-hmm. Now, what grades, is it Blue Ridge that you're at?
Yes, I'm at Blue Ridge. It's preschool through fifth grade.
Okay, how is, because, of course, when I was in school, we didn't have preschoolers. How is working with preschoolers at the, how is that at, done at the school library, or do you even do that?
It's a process, and it changes constantly. We had 5 preschools last year, so there wasn't as much time for me to service preschool,
mm-hmm.
and they just came and checked out materials for the most part. This year, we don't. The preschool has been changed in the Columbia Public Schools District, so now I only have 2 preschools in our building, and so I'm looking forward to going back to doing some more of my story times. I pulled out my notebook and showed teachers, and we talked about how we could collaborate with the different themes that they use, and so it will be more. I'm hoping to have more of a story time for preschool once a week or every other week in the library, so I'm excited about having that connection as well.
Great. I remember going into preschools to do story times was, and I hate to say this about like kids who are already in school, but the preschoolers were just so much more excited about books.
They are.
They were excited about everything.
That is true. When you get to your fifth graders, you lose the excitement is
yeah.
that they're still fun to work with. Well, thanks for letting me call in today and just say how much I'm enjoying this class and how excited I was about the partnership that it seems like Hillary was talking about.
Yeah, I read Hillary's post, and it was one of those dash a tear away from your eye posts, because it was exactly what this relationship ought to be.
Yes, I
right,
agree.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And you'll get a point of extra credit.
Okay, great, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, we have another caller.
Hello?
Hello.
Who are you?
This is Hillary.
Hello, Hillary. We were just talking about you.
So I hear.
And actually, could you turn down your computer? I think
oh.
I hear it in the background.
Yes. How about I walk away from it?
That would work, too. The guy at the control is giving me the thumbs up.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in the room with April Karlovit, too, who
hey.
Actually is the person who takes the book Bombeal over there to Blue Ridge. So
oh, great.
Thanks, Rebecca. And I was calling in about the question about Lapsit. Because
yeah, because you do that kind of thing,
I
don't you?
I do Lapsit programs here in Columbia. We do Walker,
mm-hmm.
and we divide it Walker and pre-Walker.
Ah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to add, beyond the early literacy skills and getting the parents into the library, that one of my joys with that program is actually seeing the parents connect, because it's usually first-time parents that come in,
mm-hmm.
and they don't know about a lot of the resources in Columbia. They don't know about parents as teachers or little swimmers at the ARC. And I give them some of those resources, but then they start to share their resources together, and they start to form play groups. And
mm-hmm.
a couple of years later, the kids are still in those same play groups at the library. So
you've actually gone beyond just a literacy experience and turning it into almost social advocacy for the new-time parents, first-time parents.
Yeah, we try to give them about 20 minutes after the program
mm-hmm.
with some music on, where we hang out in the room so that we can answer any of their questions. If they've got questions about CDs or books, we can answer those, but they can hang out and just enjoy being together with their kids, too.
Great. Well, thank you for calling in and telling us about it. I have to confess that I have never actually done a Lapsit, so it's helpful to have you on the other end of the line since you do so many of them. And are you doing anything with the baby sign program?
Not yet. I want to do baby sign. I've seen more and more of our parents are using signs
mm-hmm.
in the classroom, but I want to be more proficient in sign language before I actually try to implement it into my program, so I don't want to mess up.
Great. Well, thank you for calling in. I think we have another caller. The phone light keeps blinking.
Is that April?
Hello?
Hello, April?
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to call in the LIS program.
Okay. Who are you?
This is Catherine Kelly.
Oh. You're with Catherine with a K, yes?
Yes, I am.
All right. So I've got you down for a point of extra credit.
Oh, wonderful.
And how can I help you? Or are you just calling in for the extra credit?
Oh, no, no, no. I'm calling in to talk, too,
cool.
If that's okay.
That's great.
Well, I'm a student from Lincoln, although I have to tell you I'm calling from Denver right now.
Wow.
Because I have a younger sister that's getting married this Saturday. So had a few little computer snafus, but, you know, finally got in and I've heard most of the program. And I'm calling for, well, I guess maybe a comment and then also a question.
Okay.
I think it was Lori that brought up the issue of teenagers and, you know, some library users, young library users that might be more disruptive or
mm-hmm.
destructive. And although I currently work in an academic library and I don't have teenagers, so I can't say anything from experience, but I guess one thing, and I don't have specific programming, but maybe to find ways to get those kids more involved in making them feel like the library and the teen section is theirs. You know, might give them more of a sense of pride, and if
mm-hmm.
there's ways to find programming that would involve them more in maybe doing some planning or helping, you know, whether it's doing displays or coming up with themes. I mean, it might, I can't think of specific ways to approach those
mm-hmm.
teens and say, hey, instead of breaking that TV, you know, let's get you, you know, participating in something. But, you know, maybe if they had more of a sense of ownership,
mm-hmm.
if there's ways to find programming and involvement, maybe that would help with, you know, lessening some of the more disruptive behaviors.
Oh, great. So Lori, if you're still listening, Catherine says, try getting them involved. And so I guess this would be where a teen advocacy board would come in handy.
Absolutely. And I guess that's from one of my previous classes.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked about things like doing community, you know, surveys and things like that to find out, well, what do they want? But, you know, to make them feel involved maybe more in planning, in the use of their section. And I wish I had, you know, constructive examples to provide. I don't. But maybe to think along those lines
mm-hmm.
of finding, you know, making them have more ownership and responsibility and more pride maybe and not trash the place. So there's one little thing I'll throw out there.
Okay,
my question is, like Erica, I'm in Nebraska as well, and I have seen Lincoln become a lot more diverse over the years that I've lived there, although the section, the area that I've chosen and the branch that I've chosen, like Erica's, there's not a lot of diversity there. There's not some of the changes that I've seen in other parts of the city. One thing that I'm interested in is maybe more intergenerational programming with youth. I do know, because I live in this area as well, I mean, there are still a lot of retirees, there's some of those sort of communities, and I just wondered if other people had had experience or found, you know, found value in doing intergenerational program and maybe bringing seniors in along with younger people and trying to involve them and you know, build a connection through the library, if that might be valuable.
Well, it has been done, and I've seen it in the literature. I've never done it myself, but if anybody else in class has done it, that would be a great thing to hear about on a discussion board, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I guess I've seen through my son's daycare. They had a very brief experience of weekly visits with some of the retirement homes in those communities, and I know how much my son enjoyed it, and again, proximity to the branch library in Lincoln that I'm looking at. You know, there are a few of those sorts of communities, and I thought, you know, I mean, I've been looking at ways of, you know, more diversity as well and you know, reaching out not just to that area, but, you know, to find other things in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But the intergenerational thing, I guess, is something that I'm also interested in, and whether it be reading together, you know, partnerships, you know, those sort of things. You know, I'd be interested if other people have had any experience or tried any kind of those programming. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. You'll get a point of extra credit.
Good, and I'm enjoying listening to everyone. So.
Well, I think you're going to very shortly end enjoying listening to everybody because
we've
been
here
about 30 minutes.
Okay.
About up.
Well, I'll say good night and thank you.
Thank you for listening,
mm-hmm.
and thank you to the other 14 people, the other 13 people who are out there listening somewhere. Is our time up?
If you want to take another call, we can.
Is there another call?
Yeah, there's somebody on the hold.
Okay, I'll take this other call and then we'll end. Hello to the last caller of the evening.
Hi.
Hi, who are you?
I'm Jerry Tao from St. Louis.
Oh, hello.
Hi. I have a question regarding, like, how libraries decide which group of patrons they would focus on in terms of providing service.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if assuming that the community is fairly heterogeneous,
mm-hmm.
like children and, you know, teens may come from very different backgrounds. Some may be, you know, richer and some poorer. I mean, then how does the library decide which group to focus on? I mean, do they serve the relatively middle-class youth who may constitute the majority, or do they focus on those who are more disadvantaged? I mean, is there a magic number, you know?
I wish there was.
Right.
No, you're actually touching upon one of the main problems of librarianship is how do you decide whom to serve?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no easy answer. Some libraries may say, for instance, Baltimore County,
okay,
that, you know, our user base is middle class, and we're going to, quote, give them what they want, unquote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas other libraries, certainly my library in Denver, said that because, at least my branch, said because we're
right.
serving the poor, because
mm-hmm.
most of our people here are poor, we're going to
mm-hmm.
be a little more flexible, and we're going
right.
to try and be a little bit more flexible and try and meet their needs better.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured that the middle class and rich could either get help at, say, the central branch, which was
right. uh-huh.
more mainstream,
mm-hmm.
or they could get help at in one of the other districts, like
mm-hmm.
one of the other library districts.
Okay, so I guess that would really depend on the vision of the library director?
The library director, the staff, the administration,
okay.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I'm asking is because the community I'm looking at, like,
mm-hmm.
it's really quite heterogeneous. So I'm just wondering, you know, how the library decides, you know, what services to provide for the youth. So, yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, sometimes it's just, well, we've always done story time, so let's do more story time.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Well, thank
mm-hmm.
you for calling in.
Right,
you'll
thank
get a
you.
Bit of extra credit.
Thank you very much.
Okay, one more caller. Just one more. You're the very last caller? All right. Who are you?
Hi, this is Mike from St. Louis.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to call and try to get a question in, but
okay.
I know time's running out.
Okay, make it a quick question.
Okay, well, I had a comment. One was about the talk of the destructive teens that was
mm-hmm.
going on a little earlier.
Ah, the destructive
and
teens.
Well, I kind of wanted to phrase it as maybe destructive teens. here in St. Louis, we have a pretty diverse atmosphere of people within the city limits, and it's basically broken down between North City and South City.
Mm-hmm.
So on the north side, our branches, there's a lot of gang issues and drug issues and just overall violence issues going on. And I guess my thought was, a lot of times when patrons, teens, and children use the branch, and if they misbehave and get told to, you know, leave for the day but go ahead and come back tomorrow, these patrons tend to want to turn to vandalism.
Hmm. Well, it could be different in your area. My area, most of our kids were very well behaved because they knew their dads would beat them when they got home from work. That's a horrible way to say it, but I was serving a predominantly Mexican area, and they tended to be better disciplined than others.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess, I think the library serves as a place, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of these parents do not monitor their children.
Mm-hmm.
And
many times what I said is I'd rather have the kids in here breaking stuff than out on the streets doing heaven knows what, maybe getting involved with drugs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I believe the trend that I seem to notice is that the patrons end up, I guess, feeling that the staff member had a personal grudge against them and in turn tries to, vandalize the staff person's car.
Oh, yeah, you're in St. Louis where cars are kind of...
Yes.
Yes.
So
I hear somebody's car got stolen in cataloging class.
That is correct.
Oh, dear.
So I think that's putting a lot of fear into staff, and in turn, I think
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of staff positions starting to free up because, you know, feeling maybe the city might be a little unsafe, and these problems seem to escalate instead of finding a solution to make it a safer environment.
That's interesting. And in fact, St. Louis is a bit different from the places I have worked. So yes, that's actually a good point, that sometimes one act leads to retaliation, which leads to acts that are ultimately not good for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So thank you for calling and sharing that. And
okay.
You said you had a question, too?
Oh, my question was how the library should reach out to these children that, I guess, might feel it to be cool to be in a gang or skip out on class. And I mean, a lot of it probably is maybe more upbringing, but how the library could reach out and, you know, say, hey, we have a service here that we think you could learn to like.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good question, and one that I don't think I have time to answer. But if you could post that to a discussion board, I keep telling people, post it to a discussion board. But one of the reasons I'm telling people this is next week, I think it's next week, we're going to be actually talking about children's programming. Oh, no, sorry, next week we're talking about development, then programming. But that certainly is the kind of thing where it seems like if we could get kids early enough, or if we could get them enthusiastic enough about library stuff, that might actually factor into their thinking when they're approached and are thinking about joining gangs or getting involved with things that perhaps are not what the society deems as good or indeed right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's another good issue to think about. Hmm. Well, thank you, Mike, for calling in. And you're down for a point of extra credit?
Okay. Well, thank you.
And thank you to everyone who listened tonight. This was actually very talkative. I didn't get to finish my story about my article, but you know what? You can read it if you want to. If you email me for the citation, I will be happy to send it along to you. And until, I think, for about another month, we will actually be on the discussion board. So I will talk to you in a month, and until then, have a very good night.